Hey, this is Jeremy. Just wanted to hop on before the episode started with a few announcements. We really want to hear from you, and perhaps the best way to do that, we actually have a subreddit now. It's just r/polyphonicpress, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But it's always been my dream to have a community where we can all get together and talk about the albums that we review and just music in general. So if you want to join the community and start the community, really, because it's quite small right now, it's just r/polyphonicpress. And you can always help out the show in various ways. You can check out our Patreon and get these episodes the day before that they go live, and leave a rating and a review on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Those are great ways to get in touch with us as well. That's it. I just wanted to say that. And now on to the episode. Thank you.
Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is ZZ Top, Eliminator.
Ah, that's the one from about, what, 86 or something?
Yeah, 82 or 83, I think. This is an album I'm kind of familiar with. I think my dad had the tape, I think, here we go. So this is what it says on allmusic.com. It says, ZZ Top had reached the top of the charts before, but that didn't make their sudden popularity in 1983 any more predictable. It wasn't that they were just popular, they were hip, for God's sake, since they were one of the only AOR favorites to figure out to harness the stylish synthesized grooves of New Wave and then figure out how to sell it on MTV. Of course, it helped that they had songs that deserved to be hits, with Gimme All Your Lovin', Sharp Dressed Man, and Legs. They had their greatest set of singles since the heady days of Tres Hombres. And the songs that surrounded them weren't bad either. They would have been singles on El Loco, as a matter of fact. The songs alone would have made Eliminator one of ZZ Top's three greatest albums, but their embrace of synths and sequencers made it a blockbuster hit, since it was the sound of the times. Years later, the sound of the times winds up sounding a bit stiff, but it's still an excellent ZZ Top album, one of their best, yet it sounds like a mechanized ZZ Top thanks to the unflaggingly accurate grooves. Then again, that's part of the album's charm. This is New Wave blues rock, glossed up for the video, looking as good as an omnipresent convertible on the cover and sounding as irresistible as Reaganomics. Not the sort of old-school fans or blues rock purists will love, but ZZ Top never sounded as much like a band of its time as they did here.
Okay. Yeah, I'm more of a blues rock. They would consider me more of the blues rock purist, but you know, some of the songs on this aren't bad for sure.
So yeah, so this is their eighth album. It was released on March 23rd, 1983. Genres are hard rock, blues rock, new wave, and synth rock. Released on Warner Brothers Records and produced by Bill Ham, which I think Bill Ham produced all of their albums.
Okay.
And there's 11 songs, and it's divided. The first side is tracks 1 through 5, and the second side is 6 through 11. So side 1 starts with Gimme All Your Lovin' and ends with I Got the 6. And so here we go. Without further ado, here is the first song on Eliminator by ZZ Top called Gimme All Your Lovin'. All right, ending side one with I Got the 6. This is pretty good so far. I mean, it's good rock and roll music, and it's not as synth heavy as I was expecting.
Yeah.
It's there, for sure.
I knew what the hit sounded like for sure, and there's it's really a lot of it's pretty subtle, but you can definitely hear a little bit of the electronic drums sometimes, and you can sometimes hear a little bit of like the chorus on Billy Gibbons' Les Paul. I'm sure he's using his Les Paul in this. I don't know. Sometimes it's a decision, but it's not bad. It sort of works with what they're doing here. It's not my favorite era of ZZ Top, and it's not really my favorite era of music in general, but there's good stuff that came out of here, and this really isn't the worst.
No.
That came.
No, it's not. So. And I think this is when they started to embrace their more of the sounds like an insult, but I don't mean it this way. The more gimmicky aspects of ZZ Top, with like the long beards and the fuzzy guitars and all that, the more visual stuff that they did. This is, I think, the beginning of all that. This is just, honestly, like, what, I don't really know what else they could have done. Like, I suppose they could have kept in the pure blues rock of their early stuff, but they're not deviating that far from it. I mean, it's like blues, but sort of embracing some new technology, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's very slicked up for sure. Yeah, could they have gone like the direction of, say, like other Texas compatriots did, like Stevie Ray Vaughan and his brother Jimmy, who really didn't latch on to the synth thing at all and were still quite popular. So it's sort of interesting to say if they had done that. I don't know. Like ZZ Top, Billy Gibbons, he definitely had the chops to maybe do that. I don't know if maybe it's Stevie Ray Vaughan level chops, because that's another level. But he's definitely a very good guitarist, and having the power trio sort of lineup that they've always had. I don't know. Maybe they could have done that. But it was partly what gave Stevie Ray Vaughan the ability to be as popular as he was without going down the synth path or the electronics path, in that it's just because he was such a spectacle to watch.
That, and I think it's also like this is like 10, 12 years into their career at this point, and at the same time Stevie Ray Vaughan was just starting out, and so it's sort of like maybe 10 years after this Stevie Ray Vaughan would have changed things. I mean, like to them, like doing the blues thing it may have gotten a little stale, a little boring. They wanted to do something different.
Yeah. Well, their first album came out in 69. I know that because I have it. And then they had, the LaGrange in the middle of the 70s. And, I think Diguelo was the album that came out in 79, which by this point they had the beard. So they're starting to embrace the look at that point. But yeah, the sound of that ZZ Top came to be known for in their MTV period was definitely started with this album and the videos that came with it, which were a little on the silly side.
Yeah, but you know, that's
fun.
They're fun. They're totally fun. It's funny because you think of bands who like it is odd that it's this band embraced that theatrical side so much, you know, because like a band like Kiss started out that way, but these guys didn't, but they embraced it, and it's weird because I don't think it was. It seemed like it was something they genuinely wanted to do. It didn't seem like they were pushed by their management company or the record company or anything to do that. It sort of seemed like, well, this will be fun. You know,
it doesn't sound like they, I mean, nothing that they really did was taken too seriously. I think that's just sort of their outlook in general is, you know, they're musicians. Sure, and there's a certain amount of to that they take seriously, otherwise they wouldn't be as good as they are. But to embrace sort of the silliness that transpired in some way, I mean, they had to know it was a little goofy, but it totally worked for them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it worked. I mean, I just saw them this past summer, and they were, they were still doing it. I mean, even though I know Dusty Hill has passed away, they've got a new guy, and you know, they're still all the light show and the like weird gimmicks on the stage, the furry guitars and everything had it all, and it was fun. It was a fun show to watch, and so you know, I mean, it and because the reason I say it doesn't feel like they were forced to do it or anything like that is because like nobody else was doing anything like that at the time. So it's not like they were following a trend. There was no trend of that stuff. So it's like,
not really,
you know,
I mean, I think it's just like Billy Gibbons. I don't know. He's had a beard since basically forever. I think he's always sort of had it. Dusty Hill, maybe about as long. I know Frank Beard, oddly enough, the guy with the name, did not have the beard always. He did a little bit during this period for the sake of, you know, fitting in with the look that they were going for. But again, he didn't keep it. Well, but I know Billy Gibbons always liked hot rods and stuff like that. He had custom-made cars for him, and every once in a while he gets another one, and they're always amazing, beautiful cars. He's got good taste when it comes to that. Oddly enough, so does Jimmy Vaughn. Yeah.
That's cool. But, yeah. I mean, the whole thing just, I guess the summary is just, it's just fun. That's really all it is. So I guess, yeah, we'll move on to the second side of the album. And it starts off with probably their biggest or one of their biggest hits called Legs. So here we go. Okay, and ending the album with Bad Girl. The second half was a little more synth-heavy than the first half.
It started off with Legs, which is quite synthy, actually. Of the three hits, it was the one that was quite synthy.
Yeah, so. And then Thug, which was pretty synth-heavy. And, to be honest, by the time we get to TV Dinners and Dirty Dog, I was a little bit over it. I was starting to get a little bored with it's just, I don't know if it's the same, like the same drum sound, the same guitar tone, the same sort of feel, same everything. And I don't necessarily need an album to deviate a lot, but it's like every song has the same like sonic qualities to it. And it's just a little, I don't know, it started to get a little little stale after a bit. Not necessarily bad songs. There's nothing wrong with the songs. It's just more of the same.
Yeah, it's not a lot of, that TV Dinners was a little bit of a departure just because of its subject matter, but I thought it was an amusing song about frozen meals. Certainly by the time Dirty Dog was on and stuff like that, I had pulled out my phone and was trying to check other things. So.
Yeah, no, and same here. I was honestly started to get tired and bored, and you know, there really isn't there's nothing I can nitpick about the song. Like there's nothing wrong with the songs themselves. They're just as good as any of the other songs. I think the problem is they're the same as the other songs. They're just, I don't know.
There's sometimes something wrong with too much consistency. Yeah. It's nice to vary a little bit. Like sometimes even in quality where it keeps you sort of interested. That is saying something about the quality of their songwriting. It's just the subject matter of most of their songs is not particularly deep or anything like that, but they're decent songs and they're quite consistent in what they do. An entire album of it was it's a little tough to get through sometimes.
Excuse me. The first half of the album, I mean, maybe it's because I'm more familiar with those songs. I mean, Give Me All Your the hits, the Give Me All Your Lovin', Got Me Under Pressure, Sharp Dressed Man, I know those songs. And maybe that has something to do with, but it's also I think the best song on the album is I Need You Tonight. It's this slow blues thing.
Yeah, I thought the bass line on that was actually it is a really thick bass tone. It was really cool. Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I'd never heard that song before, and I thought that was a really, it's more of that, please. I think the positive things that I said about the band still stand. I think they embraced the visuals and stuff, and I think that's all cool. But I think maybe at this point I know this is a big album, but maybe they were more focused on writing singles rather than putting together an album, a cohesive sort of thing. So maybe that has something to do with it. They're thinking of all these songs as potential singles. And so maybe that was their mindset going into it. I get that mentality of, wanting to have a consistency. And so maybe even if not all the songs end up being singles, they're still, if someone picks up the album, they're still going to be this album is, it sounds like the other songs that I know. But that's a really, really fine line to try to walk. I mean, you end up, you can either, you don't want to deviate too much because, then people are going to say, oh, I wasted my money buying this. I've heard that complaint a lot. There's one or two good songs on this album and the rest are crap. But also you don't want to make all the songs sound the same because then it's well, why did I buy this album? I could have just listened to the singles. All the songs sound the same. So it's a really fine line to walk, and it's really hard to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I always appreciate a good album just because when all the songs come together, it's especially if they're all cohesive together as an album, it's just it's becoming more and more evident that that's quite the feat to do that. And there's a few artists that come to mind that consistently do that in my mind. It's not the easiest thing to do, but I always think back to Tom Petty and Heartbreakers and Sloan and other bands that are just consistently putting out good albums, albums of material that actually go well together.
Yeah. And, I have huge amounts of respect for the ones that can do that. Absolutely. Cause this album here, it's, yeah, I think I wouldn't put it. Okay. So that brings us to that the question. Like, would you listen to this again?
Yeah. It's I'm not as likely to listen to this one nearly as much as I would put on some of their earlier stuff. I just like their earlier stuff more. The sound. I mean, there's some good songs on this for sure, but I think you're better off getting like a best of collection if you want the stuff from this. I can't say it's a bad album or anything like that. It's just it gets old after a while.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel the same way. I probably wouldn't listen to the whole thing again. I'd probably pick up a best like a greatest hits collection or just, you know, take a few, because, well, there are a few songs, a few deep cuts that I really like. Like, I Need You Tonight. I actually think that's the strongest song on the album. And so, I would select that one, but as an album, again, I probably wouldn't listen to the whole thing again. I would listen to the hits and, you know, one or two of the other songs, but probably not as an album. So, yeah. So anyway, I guess we will end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We want to hear from you, whether you agree or disagree with our review of this album. You can always reach out to us by going to the contact page of our website, polyphonicpress.com. And while you're there, you can check out previous episodes. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do that by going to buymeacoffee.com/polyphonicpress. It's really easy. You don't have to sign up for anything. And all those links are in the show notes. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.